Welcome to episode 330 of the Abnormal Context Machine, a pseudo-annual Halloween spectacular podcast for the Mac Observer. In this episode, we join our hapless interns as they try their luck at getting candy from the neighbors.
Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat.
I never got that.
Got what?
Smell my feet. What are they supposed to smell? And why would they smell it in the first place? I suppose it was something like running a 100-yard dash. Meters. Or maybe climbing a mountain.
No,
or
not F-E-A-T, doofus. F-E-E-T. You know, feet. Because I have that kind of fungus thing.
Shh. Did you hear that?
Hear what?
That.
Oh, my God, Sierra, what is that?
It's the heaven. Hey, isn't that Michael Dell?
Hey. That's right. It's me on my trusty prototype Dell car. I'm bringing back Headless PCs.
Wow, hey. Happy Halloween, Brian.
Happy Halloween, those rascally interns.
I know. They are always getting themselves in trouble.
They're always getting themselves in trouble. It's like they have a knack for it.
They do. Well, yeah, they really do.
Well, let's see here. This is obviously our Halloween special.
Right.
Our pseudo-annual Halloween special.
Our semi-annual Halloween special.
We did one in 2013. Kind of just, like, didn't get around to it last year.
Well, Halloween snuck up on us last year. It's like,
you never have any idea when it's coming.
No, it always catches me off guard.
Yeah, exactly. I think, though, instead of trying to come up with some sort of, like, let's pretend scary topics, we should talk about Apple's earnings report.
Well,
that was yesterday.
That was yesterday, and from
as of this recording,
yeah, it could be scary. Well, for some people,
yes, competitors.
Yeah, for competitors, not for Apple. Yeah, man, another record-breaking quarter.
Yeah, another record-breaking quarter by a lot. Let's see, what did Apple actually do? Now, I wrote this stuff up yesterday. I mean, I didn't, like, pull it up ahead of time or anything.
No, that would just be silly.
Yeah.
Totally silly. Okay, so what they did was $51.5 billion. Carl Sagan-ish billion in revenue.
Are you going to do a Carl Sagan for us?
No.
Okay.
No. Why do I keep coming back?
I have no idea, man.
I don't know.
No idea. Maybe because you like the monsters.
That must be it.
All right. Anyway, this compares to last year, $42.1 billion. So that's a significant increase. Like, what is that? Would be $9.4 billion in increased revenue in the last year, which is just an absolutely insane. And then earnings of
$11.1 billion,
which is $1.96 in earnings per share.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
You know, it really is. And that compares with the $8.5 billion last year, with the earnings per share of $1.42. It is quite intense.
Yeah, what I liked during the earnings report was after Apple had been talking about all these numbers and how well they're doing in all these different markets, where Tim Cook says, "So yeah, we're doing pretty well."
Yeah. I actually found that to be pretty interesting. He was actually specifically talking about China.
Mm-hmm.
I think I even have that quote here. He said. Actually, let me just read the. Let me read some of this quote.
Okay.
I took the time to just transcribe it. It seems like we should use it.
Yeah, why not?
So he said, we've been able to grow without the market growing in China. iPhone 6 was the number one selling smartphone in mainland China last quarter, and iPhone 6 Plus was number three. So we did fairly well.
So we did fairly well.
Yeah, it's just I love that he would do that. I don't know why. And maybe he didn't even intend it to be, you know, snarky, but
it was a very well-timed comment. It was awesome. And especially after seeing what they did for their yearly numbers. 234 billion in revenue for the year.
234.
That's up 28%.
Sure about that?
I'm reading it right out of your article.
Oh.
So, are you sure about that?
No.
All right. So, 234-ish billion.
No, 234 is right. Yeah, it's just so much money. It's just so much money. They've got 205 billion in the bank. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. So let's look at, let's look at iPhone numbers first. How many iPhones did they sell?
That's a good question. But if you look in some of my articles, I believe I say.
Yeah, because they didn't actually include it in the press release. They used to, but they didn't this time around, but they did mention it in the conference call.
Okay, so 48 million iPhones, 5.7 million Macs.
It's a record quarter for Macs, all-time record quarter for Macs, and a record September quarter for iPhones by a lot. It was actually only, it was just at the high end of expectations for Wall Street, so iPhone sales didn't really. Didn't really impress anybody. Let's actually talk a little bit about that right now.
Okay. Let's do. Yeah, so they had 2 days of iPhone 6S sales in the quarter.
Right, and 6S Plus, of course.
Yes.
And they did 13 million, and that was helped in part by the fact that they sold in China. And, of course, they were able to, you know, ramp up production earlier and have a lot of these things ready to go.
Nonetheless, I kind of get the feeling that it doesn't matter how many iPhones Apple sells. There's some analysts that feel like it's just never enough.
Well, okay, that is a great point, except for the fact that it's not. When analysts really actually don't care what Apple does, analysts care about how Apple does relative to their own predictions. Not Apple's actual performance. It's that performance relative to their own predictions. And so many Apple fans like to come up with this idea that who are they to set these expectations? And who cares if Apple doesn't meet their expectations? Well, the reality is that stock price is based on those expectations. Stock price is not based on what a company did. Stock price is based upon what Wall Street thinks a company will do.
That's a really good point. So if Wall Street expected Apple to sell, say, 53 million iPhones.
Rightly or wrongly.
Rightly or wrongly. And Apple sells 48 million.
Back up. If Wall Street expects Apple to sell 53 million iPhones, they're going to then raise the stock price to match that expectation. The stock price coming into an earnings report is based upon what Wall Street expected. It is not based on what Apple did. It is not based upon what Apple said it will do. It is not based upon Apple's own guidance. It is not based upon the previous quarter. It's not based on the previous year. It is based entirely on what analysts have set up their you know, it's called consensus estimates. It's basically just an average of all the various estimates.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the stock price is based on. So the coming out of an earnings report, Apple stock is going to then be adjusted relative to those expectations along with new expectations for the next quarter and the quarter after.
Okay, so if Apple comes in below what the analysts are expecting, then the stock price will adjust accordingly. It will come down because Apple didn't sell as many as they expected. And so now the stock price is in line with what Apple actually announced.
Right. And again, remember that every company's stock is based upon future expectations. Everything that a company has already done is already baked into every company's stock, not counting surprises,
mm-hmm.
and not counting new developments. Right? So for every single company, everything that they've already done is baked into the price. And in most cases, in almost all cases, as a matter of fact, everything that Wall Street expects that company to do in the future is also already baked into the price.
See, that I find this fascinating because it feels to me like a lot of what happens with Wall Street is based on emotion and expectations. Now, I know there's a lot more that goes into it, and the people, for the most part, that are coming up with these figures for what they expect a company to do, they have worked really hard to be able to estimate things like this. It's not just off the cuff numbers, but still.
Sometimes it is, and it does still remain the fact that a lot of analysts don't understand Apple or its value proposition. Tony Sakanagi is one of the big ones of that.
Huh. Yeah, listening to him on earnings calls, the questions he asks. He's very consistent. I'll give him that.
Well, he did have a new record of one conference call in a row of asking a pretty good question, and that was last quarter when he basically asked, how should I be thinking, or should I be thinking differently? He didn't quite say it this way, but it was essentially, should I be thinking differently about the fact that that you're not going for market share? And yeah, the answer is yes.
Yes.
Yes, Tony, you should be thinking differently about that. And also, don't get me wrong, Wall Street is rigged against retail investors. A lot of the money right now is being made in high frequency trading. A lot of the money is being made by hedge funds the hedge funds are actually doing a lot of the high frequency trading. Wall Street is rigged against ordinary folks. It's absolutely true. But if you're going to invest in a company like Apple, and I do own a tiny, tiny, tiny holding in Apple. If you're going to invest and hold in a company like Apple, that is one area where the riggingness of Wall Street is least stacked against you.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that makes sense. Yeah. So at least there's that. But
at least there's that. But in the meanwhile, I get super tense when. Every quarter, Apple fans start screaming about how analysts are idiots and they don't understand Apple, and Apple just turned in a record quarter. Why is the stock going up or down? It's because that record quarter has already been figured into stuff, folks. This is, believe it or not, all of these billionaires are not crazy. And I'm talking about the hedge fund guys in particular. You know, all these filthy, filthy, filthy rich people accumulating money at the top of our society through Wall Street, they're not crazy and irrational. They might not all understand Apple by any stretch of the imagination, but what happens to Apple stock does follow the logic of Wall Street.
So really, this is about understanding Wall Street logic versus what the rest of us would
versus
think
fan
would be.
Logic. Look, we get excited when Apple does a record quarter because it's cool. It's like validation of all the things that we thought about Apple back when the company was an underdog. At least, especially for those of us who've been around for a long time doing this.
Yes, like you and me.
Like right, and like a lot of our listeners and
mm-hmm.
readers.
Mm-hmm.
But. That doesn't really have anything to do with the value of Apple stock. And like another thing that the Apple fans like to point to is Apple's relatively low PE. That's the price to earnings ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And a price to earnings ratio is based on forward expectations. And at this point, there is a law of large numbers limit to how much Apple can grow absent new product lines, like, say, an Apple car.
Right. And it looks like Apple gets that as well. Hence, the Apple car that's not confirmed officially, but looks like
it's
pretty much a sure thing.
Or it's being worked on at the very least.
Yeah.
Could still be canceled. That's always possible.
Sure.
I just don't think it will be at this point. But that's also beside the point. The reason why Amazon has like an infinite price to earnings ratio, because, you know, the company doesn't actually make any money, is because Wall Street delusionally thinks that at some point Amazon will make money, which actually is not true. Amazon, I believe more and more that Amazon can never ever make money, because the second Amazon flips the switch on this massive engine it has to start actually getting a profit from people, they will leave room for other people to compete.
So Amazon has essentially created a business model where, to remain successful, they have to lose money.
They have to at least not make money.
Or not make money.
Or find new ways to make money. I mean, like, Amazon's cloud services are actually quite profitable and successful. The company's doing a great job there.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's a really good point, yeah.
But for its retail business, Amazon has effectively locked itself into a loop of never being able to actually make a profit, because the second they try to make a profit, you know, brick-and-mortar stores are going to become attractive again. Other retailers will become attractive. It's kind of a weird thing. But Wall Street hasn't picked up on that. So this is an area where I personally think that Wall Street has got it wrong. They value Amazon highly, but I don't think Amazon can ever actually make money. But if you compare that to Apple does have a relatively low price-to-earnings ratio. But it's because there is a limit to how many iPhones the company could sell.
Yeah, so it makes sense that Apple would be getting into new markets.
It does make sense, yes.
Yeah.
It does make sense. Right. So in the meanwhile,
mm-hmm.
Apple turned in this big quarter. China was huge. Mainland China was up 87%.
That's crazy.
That's just the iPhone. So Apple's iPhone business in China was up 87% in mainland China. And this is when that market was up 4%. And Tim Cook said specifically that if you back iPhone sales out of the smartphone market in China, it actually contracted.
Wow.
So that means Apple gained share, probably significant share in China during the quarter.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive when a single company can drive the market numbers like that.
I think oftentimes a single company can drive number. No, it's also possible that that the market still would have grown absent an iPhone existing, because other devices would have been sold. Of course, those other devices wouldn't have had the iPhone to model after. So, you know, you've got this weird rabbit hole to fall into. I'll stop falling. Let me read another quote from Tim Cook.
Okay.
The economic question, which I know there's been a lot of attention on, frankly, if I were to shut off my web and shut off the TV and look at how many customers are coming in our stores, regardless of whether they're buying, how many people are coming online this is actually kind of hard to parse. In addition, looking at our sales trends, I wouldn't know there was an economic issue at all in China. So what Tim Cook is saying is, like, yeah, I know that there's supposedly this slowdown happening in China, but we're not seeing it.
And that's actually, I think, also impressive, where you can have this overall economic decline in an area, but for Apple, it's not having any impact at all.
The pedant in me shies away from saying not having any impact, because it's probably having some kind of impact. In other words, Apple may be even doing better than it is.
All right, I'll accept that.
If there was, you know, if China's economy was still booming,
and you know, and it wouldn't be the same if you weren't mostly pedantic.
It's true, and mostly. And he said, "I just think that the area it's currently operating within, it's hard to tell a difference at the consumer level for us. You really can't tell a difference if you look at our daily and weekly numbers." So part of what Tim Cook was saying here, this was a message specific for Wall Street, because what's been happening is, like, for the last three quarters in a row, every quarter Wall Street's been like, oh my God, China. And this is because China has become such an important market for Apple. Last quarter, it became Apple's second largest quarter market. Mm-hmm. And so what Wall Street has been worried about is, like, well, Apple is seeing so much growth in China. If China is going to choke, well, that's going to be especially hard on Apple. That's been sort of the ongoing thematic worry when it comes to what Apple stock was doing. And during those three quarters, Apple has said, yeah, now that things are pretty good. And what Tim was saying this time around is like, no, listen, things are pretty good. Can you hear the lips that I'm moving, saying words and stuff?
I'm picturing Tim doing that, and it's okay. Awesomely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's completely ridiculous. And which doesn't mean, of course, that Wall Street's going to stop worrying about China.
No. One thing that I've learned as I've been watching the market over the years is that analysts and the market will do what they're going to do regardless of what everyone else is saying or doing.
Right. And this, again, is part of that whole thing of just because Wall Street doing – me saying that Wall Street is behaving logically is not the same as saying that Wall Street understands Apple. Some analysts do. Some don't.
Yeah, well, there are still analysts that are calling for Apple to open up the Mac to cloners again.
It's true. It's been a little bit. It's been a little while since we've heard that.
But it still comes up.
Tony Sakanagi just like he didn't do this quarter, and he didn't do it last quarter. But even the previous quarter, he was like, "Yeah, congratulations on your excellent results. Why don't you start doing things like everybody else does?" it's like, dude, how do you not get the contradiction of what you're saying?
Well, he has a logical disconnect. Clearly.
It seems like it. So in the meanwhile, Apple stock was up 4% today. So it recovered what it had lost the day before. Closed at $119.27 a share. It's up 4.12%, a gain of $4.72.
Not bad.
Not bad. And what that says to me is that is that Wall Street is starting to accept the fact that China is not tanking Apple, and that Apple can in fact continue to sell more iPhones. The question is going to be, how many more does Wall Street think that Apple can sell?
Right, and my guess is we'll be seeing adjustments to their estimates anytime now. Simply because we have the numbers from the fourth fiscal quarter, and so they'll take those into account for the new models.
Yes. So Apple's PE fell to 12.7 with the new profit numbers, and that is a little bit low. I bet you Apple ends up getting readjusted by analysts. I bet that several analysts end up bumping up their price targets a little bit. That's what I expect to see over the next 2 weeks, will be some analysts raising their price targets for Apple.
All right. Well, I'll be keeping my eyes peeled just to see what does happen. See, this is great for me because I don't have any Apple shares. So I can watch this from a truly unbiased place.
I have a symbolic holding. It has almost no value.
You do have a symbolic holding. Yeah. But the holding you do have, well, it can make for a nice thing to hang on your wall, right?
Yeah, it does. My mom got me a one share. It's one of the an actual paper share issued and framed, and she got that several years ago.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It looks good. It's fun to have on my wall. At the time when one share started doing this, it was very much to a Apple was still very much the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway,
so still that's cool. So you have your share, and since you got it that way,
split a couple times.
Okay, and yet on your wallet still looks like a single share.
Correct.
That's weird. You'd think, but anyhow, that's cool. So you have a framed share in your wall. I love it.
I do. Yeah, that is good. Hey, why don't we check back on the interns?
Oh yeah, we should.
Finally, Sierra. I think we lost them. Boy, howdy, Ainsley. It's about time. Now we can get some candy. Let's try this out. Shh, get ready. They're coming. No, you. I said it first.
No, shut up.
Hey, 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 hey. Oh, my God. They're all here.
Oh, looky here. Marge, come look. An adorable bunny rabbit, a rainbow unicorn, and... a headless.
Headless PCs of the future. Beige and glorious. Here, take one.
Well, now, hold on just a gosh darn minute. You're taking this whole trick thing way too far by trying to force one of those headless PCs. We have a gorgeous iMac.
Come on, Andy, run. Right behind you, Sierra.
Wow, trick-or-treating just isn't the same. It's not like I remember it.
not with people out there threatening to give you a PC.
Man, that's scary right there.
Yeah. Boy, howdy.
Boy, howdy, yeah.
The interns got away.
Yeah, well, you know, they can run fast when they have to.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Let us hope. All right, so there's another thing about China that I thought was pretty interesting, and that was... Tim Cook's declaration. Now, I don't think it was necessarily a surprise to anyone. I think a lot of people have been expecting it. But Tim Cook said that China will become Apple's largest market.
Yeah, he didn't put a time frame on it, but he made it very clear China is going to be Apple's largest market. And he took that beyond just meaning hardware, and he talked about apps and developers too.
Yeah. He said that the Chinese developer community is the fastest growing developer community on the planet for Apple, and that's just government developers making spyware. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I kid China.
Only the finest quality spyware for you. Here, take two.
And he said that the services, i.e. App Store downloads and other things in China are growing well. And here's the interesting thing. Like I said, I mean, this is obvious. So he also cited a figure. He said that, like, right now, China's middle class is numbered at 50 million. He didn't – if he cited a source for that, I don't remember it. But he said that that's going to grow to 10 times that size. In other words, 500 million people counted as middle class. And in comparison, the U.S. has 320 million citizens, residents,
total
people, total. And, you know, only a subset of those people are in the middle class.
Right. So, yeah, so that means that China is projected to have a larger middle class than our entire country.
Right. And with that in mind, yeah, of course China's going to become Apple's biggest market. And here's where that becomes interesting to me. What does that do to Apple? Like, would Apple start doing Chinese things first? Would Apple start designing for the Chinese the Chinese market first, and then adapting those designs to English?
That's a really good question. My guess is, at least for a while, they would run like tandem designs, the China design and the rest of the world design.
Yeah, and I do assume that Apple has probably a fairly significant team that works on the Chinese implementations of OS X and iOS both, Apple Watch as well, probably.
Sure. Well, Tim said in the conference call, and I believe he wasn't referring to China specifically, but to the company as a whole, that they're looking beyond next quarter and the quarter after that, and the strategies they're working on are for decades down the road.
Actually, that was very specifically about China. He said,
"Oh, it was."
Yeah, he said, "I would point out that we're investing in China not for the next quarter or the quarter after or the quarter after. We're investing for the decades ahead. As we look at it, our own view is that China will be Apple's top market in the world, and that's not just for sales. The developer community is growing faster than in any other country in the world. The ecosystem there is very, very strong."
Yeah, that would be pretty much specifically about China.
Yeah, fairly much. fairly specific. And the other interesting aspect of that is, okay, I don't actually think that Apple's going to start doing China first. But I do think that China concerns will become a bigger part of what Apple does. And one reason why I don't think that Apple would start doing China first, at least not in the, you know, certainly in the next, you know, 10 years or something. I'm just kind of pulling that number out of thin air. It's what I do.
Sure.
But part of the allure of iPhone and the rest of Apple's product line, to a certain extent, is that it's Western.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that. So it's in Apple's best interest to design these products for the Western world, so that they have a special cachet. Interest. Yeah.
Cachet. At least for now. That could change. That could easily change. It could especially change. I mean, you know, China is always very interested in fostering the development of homegrown technologies. And that is going to only intensify, because, I mean, not only is it important for China economically and competitively, but China also, of course, wants to be able to have a firm control over everything that's going on. And Chinese companies are going to be a lot more likely to do what they're told than a Western company. Right? So, I mean, there's a jillion reasons for China to do that. And, of course, China doesn't want Western technology companies owning the planet. They would prefer that China owns the planet.
Sure. I may not be comfortable with that, but I totally understand why they would want it.
Right. Yeah, I'm speaking clinically. I'm not advocating for this position by any stretch of the imagination. And the other thing is that, okay, go back to the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Enterprise, any kind of company with any kind of large personnel, with a large staff or, you know, large employee base or whatever, they had, you know, if they had Macs and PCs in the company, the PCs needed more support. So they would hire more PC people, right, in IT.
Right.
And those PC people, of course, all wanted things to be PC.
Of course. I mean, they'd been through their Microsoft certification course.
Right.
They want everything to comply with that. Sure.
Right. And once upon a time, you know, there were a lot of people who firmly, firmly believed that the open licensing model was superior, and that Apple's business model was not only flawed but bad.
you know, back when I was a Mac consultant and I was working with a lot of companies that had Macs in a Windows-dominated infrastructure, the joke among the IT staff was always, no one ever got fired for going with Microsoft.
Right, which is a play on no one ever got fired for going with IBM.
Right.
And the other aspect of that was that there was job security for them.
Oh, yes.
Having PC people, having PCs. And they were needed. And so the more PC people you needed, the more Windows technicians you needed to support the Windows platform, the more power they got, the more Windows PC systems there were, and Macs were largely shunted aside throughout enterprise. And some of that, too, was, of course, because Apple was doing a really, really, really bad job of supporting the needs of enterprise, some of it. But a lot of it was the fact that you just didn't need as many... I mean, I can't tell you how many stories I would hear about how, you know, one guy or one woman would support 50 Macs in an office, and that wasn't their job. You know, whereas
right.
like a company with 50 PCs is probably going to have, you know, one or two full-time people who are overworked. And
yeah, no, they'll have more than two. If they have 50 computers, they're going to have more
right.
than
two. Right, and, you know, those people... And so here's why I mention all this. I could see some of that happening with Apple. So the years progress. Sales mount in China. You know, there will come the quarter, probably not too far from now, where Apple's Chinese sales equal Apple sales in the U.S. And that mm-hmm. really should happen in the next 2 or 3 years at the latest. So okay. Apple needs more people to deal with, you know, the App Store, with developer relations, with specific interface things, as I mentioned before. Apple hires more people to cover this growing area of its business. And as it hires more people, those people are going to have more influence within the company.
That's true.
And so... I mean, I don't necessarily even know that there's a problem with any of this. I'm not complaining or predicting doom or saying that this is, you know, like, oh my God, this is going to ruin Apple. I don't mean it like that because I have no idea what's going to happen. But I do think it's an interesting area to think about. As China becomes more important to Apple, how will that affect Apple's products? Because I think that it is inevitable that it will have some kind of effect, be it good, bad, or both or neither. It'll have some kind of effect.
Yeah. And I wonder how much control will the Chinese government be able to take over Apple's designs? Meaning, will they be able to force Apple to put in backdoors yeah. into products?
That is a great question. Now, I think that Tim Cook will resist that forever. Now, what happens, though? What happens when Apple is doing, you know, $30 billion a quarter in China alone, $40 billion, $50 billion a year in China, which I think could certainly happen?
Well, considering the projections for their middle-class growth, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now the Chinese government can say, if you don't put a back door in, we are kicking you out of the country. Now, what do you do if you're CEO of Apple?
You have to do some serious thinking to figure out how to
stay
in the country. Yeah.
Well, thinking or soul searching. You know, when Google was told that it had to censor, Google pulled the plug on Google China, which was a really bold move.
Mm-hmm.
But Google's Chinese operations were tiny compared to the rest of its operations. We're talking about a scenario here where Apple's Chinese operations could be a lot of money.
Well, if Apple's Chinese operations are that kind of money, and the Chinese government were to say, back doors or you're out, and Apple says, okay, we're out, Apple takes a hit, but the Chinese economy takes a hit too, right?
That is true, both from the worker standpoint and from the economic activity standpoint. So, yeah, Apple does have some pushback there. And Apple has pushback even now because it does hire, I want to say that there are roughly 2 million people involved in its supply chain. Could be wrong about that, but I think that's about right. And that's when you count all of the companies, not just Foxconn.
Yeah, well,
at least 1 million. It was 1 million some time ago.
Sure. And if Apple is like, yep, we're pulling out, then the backlash will ripple out through all of these other companies because now they're not making as many parts and they don't need as many people to manufacture things. So I could see where Apple could have some leverage.
Yeah, some leverage. And of course, you know, all of this also depends upon relationships between the Chinese government and the U.S. government.
Right. We've already seen the Chinese government try and use Apple as a pawn in their political games.
Yeah. And if things were to heat up, you know, China could well decide. I mean, China could handle the loss of 2 million jobs a lot easier than Apple would be able to handle the loss of that business. Not to mention, like, you know, imagine if all of a sudden Apple couldn't manufacture Foxconn tomorrow.
That would be a problem.
That would be a huge problem. And so now, you know, some shareholders would be all pissy. There are plenty of people who would say that Apple should kowtow. You know, Apple should do whatever it takes to keep making that money because that's the only thing that matters is money. So, you know, Apple should put in that back door. If that's what they have to do to stay in China, then they should have to do that. And Apple would be subject to investor lawsuits for not doing so when, I mean, you know, if it lost $50 billion a quarter in business.
Yeah, people would take note.
Yeah, people would take note. Now, all of this is utter speculation, obviously.
Right,
but it is like I said. I think it's a very interesting thing to think about after Tim Cook's comments.
Well, if it looks like relations with China are getting kind of rocky, and we see Apple suddenly working on major factory spaces outside of China, that might be a red flag. Because if Apple were to try and just take everything that they're manufacturing in China outside to other areas, that would be kind of big.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, China enjoys being the place to make things because those are jobs. And China doesn't want to lose that.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, it's going to be... Apple remains an interesting company to follow. You know, so many important things going on involving Apple at this point.
Yep. Hey, there was some math you did yesterday. And I think it's kind of important that we share what you figured out about some of the percentages Apple was talking about, or one in specific.
Well, the problem was, of course, that it was a word problem.
Oh, those are the worst.
Yeah, those, like no one gets word problems. So I noticed that several mainstream sites, newspapers and media outlets, as well as some Mac media outlets, were reporting that 30% of iPhone customers were switchers last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is not what Tim Cook said.
So then what did he say?
Well, here's the quote. This actually came... So part of the problem is that it wasn't as clear the first time, and it was Stephen Milanovich who asked for clarification on this. So this was, I think, at the 45-minute mark. The 45-minute mark. Tim starts saying something along these... exactly along these lines. for customers who purchased an iPhone last quarter and replaced a smartphone, that 30% of those switched from an Android device. There would have been some switchers on top of that from their from other operating systems, but obviously Android is the largest one by far. That number is the largest that we've ever recorded since we began measuring it 3 or so years ago. It's a huge number, and we're very, very proud of that number.
Okay, so to make sure I've got it straight, what he's saying is that 30% of people that were upgrading a phone came from Android, not 30% of iPhone buyers came from Android.
Right. Now, it's still a big number. The problem is that Tim did not put a number on the number of people upgrading from another smartphone. So we don't know how big of a subset it is. I mean, it's not going to be a small number by any stretch. Like if it's only...
Right. It's nearly a third.
Because
he said 30%.
Right, well, right. So, yeah.
Of the subset, 30% of the subset.
If it was only 30% of half of Apple's customers, right, that would be so the 40... Actually, let's do some mass. What did they sell? 48 million iPhones, right?
48.
24 times 0.3. That was still 7.2. Oh, yeah, duh. 7.2 million people would have switched over from Android. I mean, that's a huge number. And the problem is that some places were reporting it as 14.4 million. And that's just not at all what he said.
No. And this is why I'm glad you pay close attention to these sorts of things.
Mostly pedantic.
Because you're mostly pedantic. And in this case, your pedantism...
Pedantry, I think you could say.
No. New word just for you. Pedantism.
Yeah, the problem is that's not actually a word.
Did you not hear me say new word just for you?
I know, but then I had to be a pedant about it. That was the whole thing. See, it's not actually a word.
Yeah, see that?
If you were to look that up in the dictionary, Jeff, you would not find that word.
No, but I would find your photo.
You would, mostly at least. So anyway, it it's kind of a shame. I'm actually kind of annoyed that some people didn't pay attention better, because what Apple actually recorded is super impressive, and it's important, and it really shows that Apple has a lot of momentum in the smartphone industry, that Apple is doing really, really well, that Apple is attracting Android users. Those things are all big. But now the real number is going to be compared to the fake number by some people. Yeah, it's only 7.2 million. You know, 14.4, that sounded like a lot. You know, it is a lot still.
It's still a lot. But you're right. There will be people that will look at the correct number, the number you came up with, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's only like half. Well, that's only half as good.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know what that actual number is. I would imagine that somewhat more than half of Apple's customers were already in a smartphone. And like, if you look at the U.S. and if you look at Europe, it's probably a very, very high percentage. But if you look at the emerging market,
mm-hmm.
and the number of people who are buying their first device, their first smartphone, it's going to be a lot higher.
Sure.
And that's why this little distinction is important.
Well, I'm glad you caught that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a good earnings report. It was a good conference call. Always interesting, of course.
Yes, and Tim sounds so confident in the conference calls now. Do you remember the first one he did where he just – I mean, he sounded confident, but there's something in his voice where it's like he wasn't 100% confident.
Right. Yeah, I would say he definitely sounds – the most confident that he has sounded, for sure. And, you know, his company is firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. He's a new rock star.
Yeah, he really, really is.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Someone's at the door.
Huh. Don't answer. It could be the interns.
Man, why are you always so... Whoa! Whoa!
And that's all for this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for DMO. And that's all for this week.